The following interview was conducted on behalf of the Oral History Program of the Century High School. The interviewee is Mike Pace. The interviewer is Nguyen Sa Truong. The interview took place at... Hillsborough Police Department on May 15th. No, on Sunday, May 15th at...
6:15 p.m.
Thank you. How long have you lived in
Hillsborough? I've lived in all my life, which is right now. So 30 years.
How long have you been working in the police department?
I've been
in the academy, the police department, back. Day morning or night shift. Each different shift, you have a day shift, the swing shift, the day shift. Each shift has different elements to it. You have a lot more of your paper crimes here today. And you have a lot more domestic violence, is that right?
Does the stress of
the
job get to you?
Not really. Mm-hmm. It's fun. I do things that it's the stress of anything I work out every day. I try to eat right and I have to get my partner along. So.
You
didn't
eat
yet? Yeah, really.
What do you think is the biggest problem in
this life? I was the biggest problem over the day. Jesus. No. No, it's. Biggest problem over here. Maybe be anything harder.
Drugs.
Drugs? Yeah, meth. I would say meth. Meth is a big problem in Hillsborough. And then we have a lot of ID theft that's been done lately too.
Which is related to.
Right. About 95% of cases in the ID theft cases are involved in something with are associated with internet.
How often do you
deal with criminals? I deal with criminals almost every single day I go out and work. Because there's always a crime that we respond to.
Is it scary?
Sometimes. I mean, it gets your blood pumping every once in a while. So you've got a gun pointed at you, or you've got a shotgun that was sitting outside the house. Or you go to some crime scene and there's one person dead and you're trying to find somebody else. I mean, then your training kicks in.
How often do you see crimes occur around you? What is your response or reaction to it?
What do you mean by that? Do you mean like in my personal life or professional life?
Both.
I see it. In my personal life, I see a lot of people use drugs. And in my professional life, I mean, I mean, that's what we do. We're law enforcement, so we do crimes all the time. And response, reaction, you just go out there and do a job. I don't really know what you're looking for there.
What do you believe is the biggest cause of crimes in Hillsborough?
I would say drugs. Drugs and the disparity between low income and high income families. Because when you have a wide gap of income, you're going to have a lot more crime. Peter Samuelson.
How much control do the police have in the domestic violence case?
How much control do they have?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Like, do you have a lot of power?
Well, it kind of depends on the...
Who's likely to help it?
Yeah.
This one? The state law regarding domestic violence is extremely clear. It says that if there's a situation of domestic violence, somebody has to go to jail. So we have no discretion in that. We can say, oh, well, it was an accident on your part, and you know, you really didn't mean it, you know, the person didn't mean it. Somebody has to go to jail. That's mandated by law.
So as far as control, our personal control, we don't have any control. It's all laws that control our actions within. So there's hardly any officer discretion that comes in. We kind of disbalance.
Do you think that
are you doing to the supervisors?
Would you please explain the process of investigation?
Well, when it comes to domestic violence, we usually separate the two parties and from each person what the situation was, and we base our conclusion on the crime scene and what it looks like, the marks and abrasions of the person that suffered, and if any kind of physical evidence that the suspect or the person has at the time. And we take an effective witness accounts and the 911 calls and all that, and then we make a decision based on that.
How has the police addressed gangs related issues in the last
25 years? I think in the last 25 years, I would say that we've gained a lot more intelligence on gangs. We've worked with multiple agencies. We used to have an interagency gang force, and it's very easy to get to collaborate with all the different departments within Washington County. And accumulating that knowledge and getting to know the gangs within these people, you know, able to the reasons why they do set of programs to help younger people avoid getting into gangs and able to solve crimes a lot faster and just getting through it. Because you have all this information, you have all the network. You know that Stumpy is a friend of Skippy, that is actually with Dopey, you know, I mean. You know all this info.
Have you heard any crimes?
Theory film? It's like a game, I would say a game of organized crime. Some games are very organized, some games are not organized whatsoever. So it's kind of hard to determine how serious game crimes are. These are wide spectrum, I'd say. So, I mean, it's a thorn in the community side because you're doing a lot of drugs or any kind of vandalism or tagging. It's a nuisance.
How has gang involvement changed from the last 25
years? Within the community or?
Yeah, within the community.
The incidents of people who want to do things have increased. And I'm not really sure why there is that maybe influx of people from outside places because they do things that they didn't realize. I also think there's a little bit of pop culture. It's kind of the thing, I mean, that pop culture kind of says that. It's all about how people tend to organize themselves in that kind of organization.
You can go to some of
that. Yes. A lot of your families actually move up here from California up in the Hillsborough area to get their kids out of things. But what they don't realize is you got to
send them to here.
Exactly. You got some old, you know, original gangsters that came from California up here, you know, or their parents came up here, and they had all this great opportunity to start their own gang. And they're a lot less violent than California gangs, but they're getting really wonderful being out there.
How has
Measure Life
affected
our gangs? Well, we're actually seeing, since Measure Life went into effect, we're seeing a lot more of the original gangsters going in and coming out because they're married to the house, they've served the time. And that's kind of twofold. I mean, for one, it gets them on the street for a certain amount of time. But two, they get the notoriety that they've gone to prison for shooting somebody or selling drugs or something like that. So they come back out with status, they come back with a team. Like in the mafia, they call it a made man. You know, they're now have a higher status. So now they can be one of the gang leaders and stuff like that. So it's kind of a double-edged sword when you're talking about the level of crimes.
The other thing I think that happens is they go to prison and they learn how to be better bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
They learn different ways to commit crime. They learn you know, we've seen videos of them training on ways to take guns away from police, or training on ways to not get handcuffed by police. And they practice it. That's, they've got nothing else to do with their time. And so they, it's almost like going to college for them.
Yeah, and become a better criminal in jail.
Yeah, and that's what happens is they come out knowing a lot more about committing crimes than they did in the
first place. Either that or a study up on how and how can we get away from it. What do I need to do in order to do the crime and not get enough so that I won't get caught? You know, they won't go past that.
Sure, they have access to law libraries, and a lot of them that have a little extra time will go in and study up on the law, file their own appeals, represent themselves in some cases.
What type of people join gangs in Massachusetts, and how is the type of people in gangs changed when the classroom practice?
Well, gangs were originally developed back in Mexico to to protect themselves from the banderos or the bandits within the Mexican area. They moved up here and kind of protect themselves from the American culture. Kind of banded together. I mean, you look at the Irishmen and stuff that came from overseas and back in the 1940s or whatever. And they kind of banded together because they were a subculture. And so that's kind of where the gangs came from. So you're looking at back in the 1980s, you're looking at a lot of people that come from low income places, you know, families and stuff like that. And then the type of people changed over the last 25 years, like you stated, it was pop culture. So you'll see. I've seen, I was watching a video the other day where this guy, his family lived in the West Hills up here in Portland, and his family's like totally rich, got yachts and stuff like that, and he's just gang banging. And he's got the jersey, and he went to prison for 25 years for killing somebody. I mean, he had the education, he could have gone anywhere, but he found the family support that he needed, that he didn't have his own family. In the gangs. And that's what some of these kids do. I mean, you get the full-time dads and the full-time moms out there working, okay? And they have no family structure, so they go out there and they look for this. And they see that they get respect from, they see the respect within the gangs. And they go, I want that. I want that for me. And so they want to be that, but what they don't understand is that, oh geez, the leader of the gangs are using them. Give them $15. You know, go out and sling my dope, sit back here nice and pretty, you know, and again, let's go to jail for a little bit, for a huge time, you know, and they're just using it, it's not, you know, right.
I think everybody has a good sense of knowledge and all, and feel like they're a part of something. Kids, that's why a lot of kids do sports. You know, obviously, no parent families in some cases. People are going to find something that says that they feel like they've got some support and frankly some protection.
After September 11th, are there more crimes or less crimes to
do? You know, me and Dave were actually talking about this on the road. 9/11 was actually a terror attack. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about terrorism, there's basically three different kinds of terrorists. There's the crazies, which you look at the Islam. You're looking at the ideologicals, which you're looking at the Al-Qaeda or some bin Laden. And then you're looking at the criminal, which you're looking at Noriega. After 9/11, you're looking at Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. So what terrorist acts usually do is they do mass casualties to gain notoriety for their theory. So with Al-Qaeda, they do it in power so they can have mass media for their own, you know. This is what we're all about. But it failed for them because they don't know. I mean, nobody knows what Al-Qaeda is all about. Nobody knows what their mission statement is, stuff like that. So they just figured out that. So when you're looking at 9/11, I mean, there's probably, I can't really tell you for sure, but if you look at it, there's probably a short decrease in crime because everybody was like banded together. Oh, we only got these terrorists out there. But then it just went back to normal. Because then it really increased because, I mean, unless you're looking at some kind of social change or like the riots back in the 1950s, 1960s. Yeah, if it's a social change, then you're going to have a lot more crime. Because the society is not happy with the way things are being run. But if you have a terrorist attack, it's not a social change. It's somebody wants to go out there and tell you, I have a problem with this government. So it's not going to increase the crime that much.
What is the
point
for what makes this average
police officer? We have the ASP, which is the class pulled upon. We got the OC, the punch rig. We got handcuffs. We got our radios. We got our sidearms, our handguns. We got tasers. We have shotguns, we have MP5s, which are semi-automatic weapons. Yeah, a lot of, and then we have our M4s. And then, right, then we have pepper spray balls. Yeah.
The paintball gun that shoots balls filled with the same stuff as the pepper
spray. Right.
We've got specialized vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Shields.
We have special teams, which is canine, we have either CERT or SWAT teams. Then we have our Coastal Association teams. And we have gas that we can use for hostage situations or barricaded subjects.
There's also a lot of verbal training. Just how to talk to somebody instead of resorting to using some of the other tools. Basic communication.
And there's a lot of new equipment out there, new technology that's always coming out to help them all. Well, law enforcement, there's the electric magnetic pulse weapon that they're using for car chases to slow them down. They shoot the car and disable all the electronics within the vehicle. Or they have the LoJack system, which they're implemented in most newer vehicles, and you can actually locate your car when it gets stolen. Or that we have our spike strips that stand on the roof of us when you grab tires to the business today. And then they have you look at some of the companies and they just got some off the wall kind of stuff. They're now testing out some sonic weapons to disperse riot crowds. So high speed cannon, they'll shoot a sound out and it'll make people move away because it's only in a cone area. So if they move outside the area, then they'll disperse it pretty quickly. And then they have this spider goo kind of stuff that will wrap you up. Have you seen that stuff?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. There's always new stuff coming out, but we'll come out for sure.
You mentioned about
visual
communication. Is that
more
effective
than
it
depends.
If you can, just by the police showing up, if you can resolve the situation, just by the fact that you're there and you're in the uniform, you're the police, that's the best outcome for everybody. But if you can resolve situations verbally, nobody's going to get hurt. People still may go to jail. Someone needs to go to jail, we'll take them to jail. But if you can resolve it verbally, it's all because they aren't going to get hurt, we aren't going to risk injury, trying to take them into custody. And so, really, that's the first line. You're showing up as police and saying, you're under arrest, you've got a warrant, turn around, put your hands behind your back. And, a lot of people do that. And there's people that don't do that. And so then you have to start using other tools to, make sure that we take them into custody. Basically, the people that we deal with, they're the ones that dictate the level of force that we use.
And sometimes you have to use your imagination. That's probably the best one. Their imagination to how to resolve a difficult situation. And my other jobs, I've had to come up with some really imaginative stuff just to solve people's lack of motivation and want to do this other thing you can do. And I had this one kid that I told him he was working in security for a high school. I told this one kid he had to go with me because he was going to get suspended. And he said, I don't want to go with him. And we had a hands-off policy. So I had to get him out of the classroom to go to the principal's office. I'm like, well, why do I do this? And I said, well, if you don't go with me, I'll sing to you. And he's like, no, you won't. I'm like, yeah, well. So I sang to him, And he got so embarrassed, he got up and walked with me. So sometimes you have to think outside the box, and I think that's what now police officers are doing, is thinking outside the box. How can I resolve this conflict? And then that's what really develops these new programs that we have. Like Hillsborough Police Department's got a great mediation program. The street open cops don't really have that much time to sit down and resolve a barking dog issue. But we can refer them to one of our special units that can sit down and say, let's resolve this conflict. You know, and it's that imagination with these departments that really help and bring together the community and provide these better services.
What changes have occurred
since the 80s? I would say MDT, our mobile data terminal, which is there, which sort of allowed our computer in our car. Mm-hmm. That was probably early 80s when it developed.
Yeah.
That has really increased our efficiency as we were able to look up criminal history and basically anything we want with any kind of criminal. Plus, we receive our assignments and our calls from that. Frees up a lot of airspace and a lot of airtime for dispatch. Our less lethal really has, I think, just one of the major things that's come in the last 20 years, able to resolve conflicts without having to go to lethal means, you know, without killing somebody. We can use a shotgun, beanbag, that hits me in the chest, they can drop the knife, you know, and it's a lot better than shooting in the head or shooting in the shoulder or whatever. Shooting and shooting, and when you're in a really stressful situation, it's really hard unless you get a sniper rifle or something. And usually you don't have that time to set that up. So, what else can you name?
The less lethal, absolutely, things like the taser, the use of pepper sprays. That's an in-between that's been really effective. I think tactics have changed a lot too. Yeah. There's been some court decisions that have influenced the way police officers have to react to certain situations or steps that they have to take. I think that the type of people that are being attracted to the law enforcement profession has changed too. Years and years ago, it was the big bullies that ended up being the police. And if there was a problem, they'd go in and crack somebody over the head or punch them or things like that. Now that's not what you do. Most police officers have, advanced degrees in spirit, go through a lot of training on how to avoid situations like that when you're normally, go hands on how to resolve things verbally. They've now got policies in place that say, if the person is behaving this way, here's a level of force that's justified. It's called force control. I don't know how long that's been around, but it's nice to have those guidelines. That you know that here's how it progresses at the scale.
Yeah, just to touch on people we hire, back then it used to be white men with old. We've so diversified, we've had come into the legal opportunity in the United States that we have to have a police department that really matches our culture or our community that we're doing the service. So it doesn't feel there's some kind of variance that's provided for them. And we've also brought in a lot of females and a lot of minorities within our police department, which is, I think, helped really under the law enforcement agency really understand the issue that, back in the 80s, when you had somebody who was a victim of rape, I couldn't even think about the way that male officers probably treated women back there. You're a rape, did you deserve it, or, something like that. But with the females in understanding, different minorities, we've really come a long ways in dealing with rape victims. And, kids especially, the way we deal with sexual predators and children that are victims of sexual abuse. We've got the CARES unit back over at, was it Paul or something? Or Emmanuel. Yeah, and they take in the software room, the psychologist talks to them, it's all tape recorded, so you don't have to, the kid doesn't have to sit there in court and say, that's the guy that raped me. Because that's traumatic enough for a kid to go through it once and then twice again with the investigator. Another time with, defense lawyer and the prosecution. These are just good thing, you know, great thing.
Your law enforcement is a lot more sensitive to the touchy-feely side, I think. I mean, don't get me wrong. If there's something that needs to be resolved with an escalated level of force, we'll do it, and we train to do that. But we also train to take care of things, you know, in different ways. You know, like you mentioned, we're putting ourselves in box. 20%.
How well does the new equipment perform? I think with anything, you integrate a new system or a new equipment into the police program, you have bugs. Like when we first got our NFTs, they really didn't work, and their screens were black and orange, and it was really hard to read them at night. And when you read them and you blowed up your face, people could see in the car. But I mean, you just learn, the officer learns to adapt to the equipment, and the officer and the department sets up new policies for the new equipment and train and then works for you. And then the developers of the new equipment see the issues that the police department is having today, and then they adapt this as better suited for the community. So I mean,
has technology improved for
these
departments?
Oh, really? Yes, the mobile data terminals, the computers in the car.
How have criminal tactics changed now that the
technology improved? Guys are getting smarter.
Yeah.
They're becoming more educated on things that they can do, things that, knowing where the lines are that they can come right up to but can't cross. The underage, drug age, juvenile selling drugs versus an adult selling drugs. It's a big difference in time that you're incarcerated.
And then you look at, ID theft has just really skyrocketed in the last 10 years. And we unfortunately are reactive in that crime. We're trying to be proactive. They're trying to put things in place for this new crime, but it's really hard to do because, I mean, you get these meth heads, and meth doesn't just affect, one small, the low income. No, it affects way up to the people that are like making millions and billions of dollars, and the lawyers and doctors and stuff like that. So they take this information and they'll make these like, you get a group of meth heads together, they're doing ID theft. One will be doing your fake IDs, and one will be making keys to get into mailboxes. One will be going around getting information, the other one will be making the bad checks. And it's a network, it's a cell of these people from different varieties of backgrounds and education. And so that's why it's making it so hard for us to really get above this crime. And it's a crime that we really haven't had a problem with, never had to deal with. So, you look at the old crimes like murder and rape and stuff like that. I mean, education really helps with those things right there, and talk about red flags or whatever else. But, some crimes are really old, some crimes are just really new, and just getting ahead of those new crimes.
How has technology affected police
missions? I think it's made it more effective, more accessible, more approachable, more user-friendly, more specialized. We have a lot of specialized units within this department. We've got the domestic violence resource team, we've got crime prevention specialists, we've got police services specialists that deal with just code enforcement. We've got police officers that do the day-to-day stuff. We've got the reserve unit, which is specialized in volunteer agency. We've got the cadets, which are underage volunteers that want to get into law enforcement. We've got command staff, communications, we've got evidence tech. And these are all just specialized units that work together to solve the problem in the community.
What is the most common drug
arrested
for?
Marijuana.
Lots of underage alcohol. Alcohol is a drug, and there's a lot of arrests that are related to alcohol.
Do you think that
So, it is very good.
Do you want to change?
Well, people still drive drunk. I think education's been one of the biggest, bigger keys to reducing that. Actually, I think that we probably catch a lot more drunk drivers because people have cell phones now.
Mm-hmm.
So when they see somebody drive, I mean, I call them drunk drivers. And now, and I think that our training on how to identify those people, I think that got a lot of in that too. Because I see people driving now, and I just said, man, that person's an idiot driving down the road. But because of the training I do for that, I said, chances are they're under the influence of some sort of intoxicant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get on the phone and you call dispatch and say, you know, I'm a reserve police officer. I'm following this person. Here's where we're at. Here's where we're going. And here's where I'm sitting.
Absolutely.
And they'll respond to me.
Has there been an increase in drunk driving in
recent? Yes. These guys are getting it, I mean, it's harder to hide and they're doping inside the compartments of cars. But then again, we combat that with our drugs and dogs. And we're our educational watching. When I pull somebody over, I not only look at what can hurt me within the car, with the cars, you know, moving or whatever, but I look at their body signals. Is this guy breathing like really, really hard and fast? Is his pupils totally dilated? Does it smell like marijuana? You know, I mean, these are all things that I think about when I'm talking to this guy, watching his body movements. Is this a normal proper stop? Is this something I need to investigate more? You know, a couple of years ago, our park patrol unit, I was off another officer, we stopped this lady that was using a payphone at the hair field out there, and ended up being one of the major dope sellers in Hillsboro. So we ended up searching the car and found a cracker there. I mean, it was nice. It was a nice little bus. But you never know what you can come across when you track the side. I mean, but you'll have drug houses out here that'll have like little peepholes they can look out in. And like a couple of like, what was it last year? Even the police department went into a house and they had like a big freaking machine gun just sitting in the main doorway for someone to come in, and had rocket launchers and stuff like that in there.
That wasn't that long ago.
That was like within a year.
That was recent. That was really recent.
And these bullets would have gone easily through the police car. I mean, they would have shredded anybody up.
Yeah, it was like an anti-aircraft machine. It was a hell of a machine.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Do you see a trend in the ethnic
groups being
affected by drugs?
That would change the police activity? I think drugs affect every single thing you look at. I mean, granted, you look at, you know, like Portland's been. Most of their people that use drugs are going to be the black militants. You look at, well, I mean, it just depends on what your social and your ethnic compatibility, you know, what it is. Yeah, I mean, you look at Woodburn, there's a lot more aggression in the community than there is anybody else there. You know, it just depends on what your community looks like. You look at the Indian reservation, it's a lot more Indians. I mean, drugs affect everybody. No one's, you know, I mean, it's a division. Addiction has no favorites when it comes to
it. They don't care where he's from.
And you know, drug can be anything, knock all day, anything. So I mean, every single, I don't know, it just, it goes across the board.
Which age range do you see using
this drug? I would say that if there was a particular age range, I would say between middle teens to probably early 30s, most for drug users.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the drug too.
Yeah.
Because you get older, a lot of older than that 30-year-old that we pull over for drinking, cranking in the house. You know, you think they're okay because they've been doing that since they were teenagers.
Or smoking,
yeah. I think that it's getting younger and younger too. We just had a case in Salem that broke last week. But, you know, 12-year-old girls trading sex acts from that.
Yeah.
Out of middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's there's more and more things like that that we're starting to see, you know, in surrounding communities.
And these guys aren't stupid. I mean, the drug dealers aren't stupid. They're as good as marketing as any other marketing department out there. They look at what sells. Mm-hmm. Every little girls are in love. They don't have money. They can't get parents money from their parents. But if I tell them that if they have sex with Joe, then Joe can pay me, then I can give the drug to the kid and get her hooked. And that way I have this really cool sex ring going on right now. You know, I mean, it's messed up. Because then you, if you look into the history of drugs, over in Vietnam War, you had some researchmen hooked up on drugs over there because opium was made over there, and so it was easier release for them to get away from. And the people that are selling opium knew that. They knew that the researchmen over there were stressed out and stuff. I think you don't want you to come trip with me, and I'll even first aid for free. That's how I do it here. Hey, dude, why don't you come try this, just ready weed or try this powder or whatever. And kids are like, oh, mom told me not to smoke. Your mom, did mom tell you not to pick these pills on? These pills are really cool, really narcissistic things. You know, you are believed. It's the pop culture, you know. You go to raves and they bring out these trays just full of drugs and stuff, and they'll just hand out that candy. And then they'll hand out their business card along with it. If you like it, the first set's for free, and then after that, and they got Special K, all these different party drugs, and these kids are just like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty close to that, It's crazy.
Do you believe that fighting
against drugs has become more community realistic? How do you feel about it? I think you're talking about the war on crime. Is that what you're talking about? War on drugs? I think that was... If you look at that campaign, I think you'll see that the president used that in order to get money from the Senate or dump it into the military to help them change their policies so they can help local law enforcement with that. You have to have, in order for any kind of military to help the police departments, it has to be changed. The governor actually has to say, okay, yeah, we can use government, we can use the military for that. As a police department, I can't go over and say, hey, National Guard, if you want to go out there and help me with, we got to go get some pipelines or whatever. It has to go to the government. The governor, he has to sign off, yeah, so and so can do this, blah, blah, blah. With the war on drugs, it kind of gave the president's approval of, you guys can do that. You guys can work with DEA, ATF, go down to Colombia, break some skulls open, take down Noriega, take down these major drug lords so we don't have to come in this world. I mean, that's where I think misperception of war on drugs are one of those things.
The other thing is, people that are involved with drugs are becoming more violent. In order to protect ourselves, we have to do things differently. We have to know that drug dealers that are booby-trapped, people that have automatic weapons, there's some numbers of them in Canada or Florida. We're sticking out of place, a big marijuana girl, and the guy killed all of them. Things like that happen. So, as the drug dealers and manufacturers become more armed or militaristic with their tactics and the things they do, we have to respond in common, just for our own safety.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if somebody's got a knife, we'll bring a shotgun and not being bad, we'll
bring 12 guys.
Yeah, exactly. Because we want to resolve this conflict efficiently, fast, and professionally. And that's what the war on drugs is all about.
What goes on in the drug bust, and how many cases of
drug
do
you see for you? Oh, you got to ask that. Really, I don't know. It's been known that people have used professional informants, or not professional informants, but what do you call CIs? Confidential informants. And you know, people that rat on other drug dealers or whatever, or they would do undercover buys. You know, we have a streetcar unit that deals with providing drugs and a lot of, you know, prostitution units and stuff like that. Drug-related cases do do a year. I mean, most of your crimes are going to be related to drugs, either be alcohol, meth, or whatever.
I see the thing, meth.
Yeah.
It, but the drugs in general, if you look at almost all the crimes, they're going to be related to some drug in the corner.
And do you know why meth is so prominent? Is it easy to make? There's the elements out there to make are easy to obtain. And you can go on any internet and find out how to make it. Recently, the last 6 months, there was a high school that got, a high school science teacher got in trouble because he talked his class out of meth.
Chemical reactions are very complicated.
Right. I mean, it's really dangerous because you're dealing with some very volatile chemicals. And those chemicals, I mean, if me and Dave went into a house that had meth or something like that, we would have to burn our clothes.
You can smell it from the outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have other officer friends that have gone into places to check it out, just in their regular uniform to come out, and they have their guys come out with the bunny suits and their rebreathers, the scuba setups. And they put fans in there and let it blow out for another hour before they could go in, before they felt comfortable going in. You know, sometimes we get exposed to that stuff, just dressed like this with no protection. But you try to make sure your nasal passages are clear, because you can smell those things before you get to it.
And they have rolling labs, you know, like a lab back in their van.
In the back of their car. We've seen trunks of Camaros.
Oh, yeah.
Seen the motorhomes. It doesn't take much.
It's profitable.
Obviously, how long have you lived in Canada? Nice.
Pretty much. A year.
Let's see. I'll be 36, and I lived in Idaho for a couple of years. I'd say 31, 32 years.
How long have you been working
with
the police department?
About a year, coming up to the end of the year. So I'm relatively new.
You're the duty.
Officer base here.
Do you work the election?
I've done both.
But all three?
Yeah, I've done that too.
Yeah.
Does the stress of the job get to you?
No, because I've got a really good support system. I've got other friends in law enforcement that are in this department. I've got other friends in law enforcement that are in other departments. And I've got other friends that just like to hear stories. And feel what's going on. Every subdues come across. You know, I've lived here my whole life and thought I was in tune with what's going on in my community. Didn't have a clue. Did not have a clue. It's been real eye opener for those that have been in the house.
Thank you.